This is good.
Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Hey, Jim, you know that album Lou Reed made with Metallica?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Do you think they named it Lulu after Lou's name?
Maybe. I mean, I guess they couldn't do the same thing with part of Metallica's name.
Why not?
I mean, who would buy an album called Kaka? Okay, Patrick, we are at Mike Snyder's house.
Yes, we are.
Mike Snyder's house. It's a great place to be.
Yeah, I feel calm when I come here. It's nice. It really is. It's soothing.
It's been a good workplace for
Oh, I bet. Yeah, I bet it has
it
been.
It is pretty calm.
Yep, very much so.
Yeah, it's soothing after, you know, we make you hurry up and clear off this table so we can throw all the recording equipment.
That's right.
Set that all up, right?
Well, okay. There are several options here, which is nice.
It's just got lots of tchotchkes that Julie has to beautify the house.
It's lovely.
None of it's really functional.
So we are at Mike's because he is going to be the patron guest today, a patron episode here on Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And thanks, Mike, for having us over.
Thank you, Mike.
Oh, it's good
it's
to see everybody.
Great. We can do these in person. And we're going to do something else tonight as we're recording this, but we'll get into that later. All right. Mm-hmm.
Cool.
So what's the topic today?
Well, you guys know when some album you love hits an anniversary, it's fun to look back and listen and celebrate it. Well, that's not what we're going to do. There is an anniversary involved in my topic today, but it's not of an album I've cherished, I have to admit. It's an album that I had never listened to. It's called Lulu, which was released in 2011 by Lou Reed, and he was backed by Metallica.
Yeah,
I'm a big fan of Metallica. And I'm very much a fan of Lou Reed, but I guess you'd say I kind of parachute in and out of his career from his work with the Velvet Underground onto his 40 and part of his 40-ish year solo career. I mean, I love the album New York, for instance.
Yep.
I think I try to be open-minded and experience art, whether it's music, movies, or whatever, but I have to admit I shied away from this album then at the time because the reviews were very harsh when this came out. And ever since, I've kind of stayed away from it. But somehow, something recently, I had a song pop up as a recommendation. I thought maybe somebody even mentioned it on the podcast, but I searched the website and I saw no reference. I can't remember how, but it came into my mind. And even though I thought about bailing on this topic because I thought it might not be fun, I went ahead and decided to stick with it.
I'm glad.
I thought discussing it might be fun for the podcast and folks that listen. So Jim, I don't know if you want to give a little taste of the music before we go any further. You can't play the first track because it's not appropriate for a family-friendly podcast like this. But the second track, which was released with a promotional video single, and people can find that on YouTube, gives you a taste of Reed's spoken word delivery and Metallica's instrumental support. Yep. So this song is called The View.
The View. Okay.
I am a chorus of the voices that gather up the magnets set before me. I attract you and repel you, a science of the heart and blood and meaning. The coldness of most beauties is a challenge that our youth must quickly conquer. There is no time for guilt or second guessing based on feelings. I am the truth, the beauty that causes you to cross your sacred boundaries. I have no morals, some think me cheap, and someone who despises the normalcy of heartbreak, the purity of love. But I worship the young and just formed angel who sits upon the pin of lust, everything else.
Okay.
Before we go into what we just heard, you want some background on how these guys got together?
Yes.
Okay. So Lulu was the last original music Lou Reed released before his death in 2013. prior to that, he'd released an album called, another album of his I haven't listened to, called Hudson River Wind Meditations, an album apparently made to accompany his Tai Chi exercises. And he had two live albums, including Metal Machine Music Live at the Berlin Opera House and Berlin Live at St. Anne's Warehouse. Metallica, meanwhile, had released its last studio album, Death Magnetic, in 2008, which is one of my favorite records. The next year, they backed Lou Reed at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame's 25th anniversary concert, and they performed Sweet Jane, White Light, White Heat, and they enjoyed it enough that that led to discussions about a project they could do together. According to the biography Lou Reed by Anthony DeCurtis, which came out in 2017, which I recommend for the Book Nook read listeners if they haven't read it, it's a great book. Reed had also been on a project with playwright Robert Wilson, who he had worked with before on an adaptation of Edgar Allan Poe's works for an opera, and also resulted in Reed's album The Raven, which was released in 2013. If you like this album, you probably ought to listen to The Raven. Yeah. That project was called Lulu, which is based on a pair of plays written in the late 1800s by German writer Frank Wedekind. I assume I'm saying that right. It became an opera and a 1929 silent film called Pandora's Box, which you can find on the Criterion Collection streaming service. Lulu was a dancer and a mistress who leads a promiscuous life and eventually meets up with Jack the Ripper. It was groundbreaking for its attention to a woman character being at the forefront of the plot, and for lesbianism being involved in the plot too. The idea was that this turn of the 20th century work could be transformed with Reed's mind-blowing lyrics and Metallica's intense metal riffs. According to the biography that DeCurtis wrote, he cited Sarth Calhoun, the experimental musician who suggested the pairing. Okay, I'm going to take a breath. All right, so there, that brings us to this.
I'm glad you said that, because I listened to this album for the first time ever earlier today, and I had none of that background. And so some of the lyrics, I was like, what?
Yeah.
What is this? But now it makes more sense to me now, knowing what you just said. But nevertheless, I'll defer to others first to give impressions of this work.
Well, I'll tell you, guys, I listened to it yesterday, and I remembered it, and I remembered why I hadn't listened to it probably since it came out, because it's difficult. I mean, it's a plod, you know, you really have to slog through it. And I think, Mike, it's so interesting in that background, too, that you mentioned Berlin and Metal Machine Music, because to me, those are the two relevant Lou Reed projects to this, right? It's got that intense, heavyweight, emotional, you know, grift of Berlin, which some people absolutely love, but that's a record that takes a long time, at least for me, to really get into and understand, you know, what it was. And also Metal Machine Music, which I think is just, you know, was at the time just Lou testing not only his audience, but anybody else, whoever thought he was any good, just to see, you know, will you buy this? Will you listen to this? Like, I don't know what it is. I'm just going to put out four sides of incredible noise. And of course, legendarily, Lester Bangs loved Metal Machine Music. But I think, I mean, to me, it sounds, number one, when I listened to it again initially, like, well, they didn't really rehearse this very much. Like, you know, maybe they went in and they did a few tries at it and then they just turned the tape on. And whether or not Lou was doing that to test Metallica, you know, I don't know. But I don't know. To me, it's an interesting footnote in Lou Reed's career. I don't think it really alters, you know, my opinion necessarily of what Lou's entire body of work is. Right. It kind of adds to it. It makes sense, you know, in context. For Metallica, it was kind of a strange move. And I think probably for them, it did more damage. Well, you know, relatively, right? I mean, they're still one of the biggest and greatest metal bands ever, but
right.
What they did and the way they did it, I think for a lot of their fans came off as like, wow, they really deferred to this guy, whoever he is, and like they didn't put their real Metallica stuff into it. And you know, it sounds like they're feeling their way. And you know, the best part of what we just heard there is when, you know, James actually comes in and starts singing, and then it sounds a lot more coherent. But I think, you know, the mix, for whatever reason, just didn't really gel.
It's interesting. You meant a couple things from the research and from the biography. There's some good, interesting quotes to address what you just said, Patrick. For instance, Laurie Anderson, who was married to Lou Reed, after he died, said that David Bowie predicted Lulu would eventually be embraced as a masterpiece like Berlin.
Interesting.
Whether that comes to happened, we don't know.
Right.
Anthony also interviewed Lars Ulrich for this book, and he said, the quotes I pulled from the book, Lars said, the response was more spiteful than anyone was prepared for, especially against Lou. He's such a sweet man, but when Metallica do impulsive riffing and Lou Reed is reciting abstract poetry about German bohemians from 150 years ago, it can be difficult to embrace. But he said, in some ways, it's almost cooler that people didn't embrace it because it makes it more ours. It's our project, our record. The masses didn't take to it. It makes it more precious. So it's really interesting that, and when I went back and read that in some of the other stories about that came out around the time, like, for instance, my friend and colleague Edna Gunderson did a story about this. She talked to Lars and Lou, and then David Frick did a big story that came out right before the a couple months before the album. He was there and watched them play a few of these songs, and evidently they performed it like in a circle, very live, and as you mentioned, it may have been riffy. I mean, it sounds like, I don't know if this is the right term, but like middle eighths of Metallica songs,
yeah, you know, there you
segue
go.
In between movements, and this dun dun. You know, you're not hearing a lot of Kirk really,
right?
And throughout this album at all, there's one song I forget which one it was. You know, some of these songs are 7 to 18 minutes long, and you can hear him way down in the mix doing some Kirk Hammett stuff.
Right,
and you're like, man, I'd like to hear a little more of that. But anyway,
right,
yeah, and a great point, Mike. I mean, if they had spent a year working on it, right? For example, how would that have changed it, right? But Lou has never worked that way and probably wasn't going to start, you know, at the end of his life working that way. So.
Right. Okay, so as I mentioned, I listened to this for the first time today. I listened to it top to bottom one time. So one time is not necessarily the fairest assessment.
You're still in the half percentile of the nation.
That's right. You get a gold star for actually making it through.
I'm going to say I had mixed feelings on it. So I went into it. My memory of when this album came out was that it got panned. And so I was just sort of like, I don't really have any interest in it. And back when it came out was pretty much like before like streaming became really popular. I don't know.
Yeah. It was starting to get there.
So there was no reason for me to seek it out. You know, maybe if it had been today with Spotify so prevalent, I might've just hit play, you know, the day it came out and listened to it for a little while. But anyway, point is 10 years go by, I hadn't heard it, even though I'm a pretty big Lou Reed fan and I like Metallica. They're not one of my favorite bands, but you know, but the point is it got such bad reviews, I didn't listen to it. So I figure 10 years have passed. We're going to do this episode. I'm going to listen to it beginning to end. No judgment. I'm going to go into it with an open mind. Not only did I feel like I was going into it with an open mind, but I was actually kind of hopeful that it would be good. Mm. Like the idea, like maybe this is something people didn't get at that time. And maybe it's better than, you know, some people made it out to be or what have you. The first song is Brandenburg Gate. I listened to that and I was like, what is this record? Right. I don't get it, but I will say as I listen to more and more songs, it starts to kind of suck you in because it creates this atmosphere in a way that, that a whole lot of albums do. Like it creates its own world in a way, this own kind of own sonic world. And once you kind of, go with it a little bit more, there's moments where I'm like, this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
But then then a song will go on too long or Lou will start, you know, kind of riffing too much or whatever. And I'm just like, they needed an editor on
there
this
you
thing.
Go.
You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But there were moments when I found myself quite liking it. And I will tell you at the end, which has like two of the longest songs, the last two songs, Dragon and Junior Dad, which are really long. I actually really like, I think I like those two the best.
Junior Dad is probably my favorite on the whole record.
Yeah.
It's almost 20 minutes.
Because I think they really embraced on those two, the whole idea of this kind of like beat poetry sensibility. And that was the other thing that struck me about it was that it sounded like Metallica, but it sounded like Metallica playing in like some bohemian club kind of thing, you know, the way, jazz musicians would do like in the 50s or whatever with the whole beat poetry thing. Like that's the kind of world it kind of took me into. Mm-hmm. And so when I embraced that, I did enjoy it. But it could have been better. You know, I think that's where we are. And one thing I want to mention on Lars, I was actually really impressed with how expressive Lars' drumming was on this album.
Lars is really in the front.
He's kind of the main.
Right, which makes sense with the kind of style I'm describing, right?
Right.
I'm not enough of a Metallica expert to necessarily compare his drumming style on this to, you know, what he normally does, you know, it's like, I know the Black Album and the stuff like that, right? But I know they came from like that speed metal world. So he is an accomplished drummer. Like he can do like really interesting styles. And I felt like he really shone on this record quite a bit.
Yeah.
I was going to say, if there was a spot in there, I picked a couple places to play tracks.
Okay.
Junior Dad specifically. You might just want to fade them in later. Or when you were talking about atmospherics, there is a song on Cheat on Me, there's a fade in at 3 minutes. Or actually 3:35, if you want.
Cheat on Me was another song I really liked.
Yeah, started really quiet.
Yeah.
Yep.
And again, that's like an 11-minute song. Mm-hmm. I think there was something about the longer ones, the ability to kind of like let the song breathe a little bit more, I think worked in its favor.
Yeah. Well, so exactly like you said, Jim, there's some interesting atmospherics, and I just think of the same thing, and it's interesting you said that. For instance, the song Cheat on Me, it's not all bombast. There's some interesting lead-ins to where this song is going if you want to check this out.
What
is it? 3:35?
I have a pet. Why do I cheat on me? Why do I cheat on me? I have a passionate heart. It can tear us apart. I have the loves of many men, but I don't love any of them. Why do I cheat on me? Why do I cheat on me? Why do I cheat on thee? Why do I cheat on me? Why do I cheat on me? Why? Come on! Why do I cheat on me?
So it's not all total bombast and cacophony. Right. That's not melodic, really, I don't think, depending on how you define melody. But it's different. I mean, there's something growing. There's something building there.
It's interesting. Yeah, you know, it definitely hits your brain in a way that you kind of want to see what's going to happen, you know, where it's going. Yeah.
Yeah, and listening to it, there are times when I felt like Lou's about to break into a melody, but he's actually stopping himself because, wait a minute, we're not supposed to do, you know, like melody in this stuff. And I think ultimately for me, listening to it and remembering and reading a little bit about it, also the fact that Pitchfork gave it a 1.0 out of 10, one of their lowest. For me, it's legacy-wise, it remains much more interesting for Lou Reed fans because I think, number one, that someone in his mid to late 60s would have the ambition and drive to, you know, not only summarize a piece of art from such a long time ago, right, and see it through and take a different left turn like that with Metallica, is very interesting. And I think for that reason, you know, for Metallica, I think it is a footnote probably in their career, right? It was an interesting thing they tried, but I don't think it necessarily defines them, you know, as a band. And I guess I came away thinking to myself, well, if I wanted to listen to this kind of music, there's probably other stuff I would choose first, which would, you know, even early Sonic Youth, right? Or The Fall, or even early Nick Cave solo records that are kind of him declaiming over this kind of fractured music. I might choose that instead.
So can I just say real quickly that I listened to this album on Spotify, and you know how when you get to the end of an album and it then plays another song that it considers similar to what you were just listening to, Nick Cave came up.
Okay, so there you go. So I could see that probably as being my main takeaway from that part of it, too.
I do think this...
I'm glad it exists. Don't get me wrong.
Well, I kind of am, too, because this to me fits with Lou Reed and his range, right? So, I mean, you know, we've discussed him before. He started off as a like a pop singles songwriter. Like, that's how he started his career. And he's had, you know, poppy kind of songs in his own catalog, you know, Sally Can't Dance, for example, or something like that. Or even, you know, Satellite of Love, right? Or I Love You, Suzanne. I was just doing the riff in my head. What was that other one? Anyway, but then a more famous song of his that I kept coming back to when I was listening to this was Waves of Fear.
Oh, there you go.
Like, he has also those very sort of like emotional, very heavy, not so built on melody, you know, kind of songs in his catalog. So he likes to challenge listeners that way, as you said. And sometimes he really goes to extremes. And this is, I think, just another example of that.
Mm-hmm.
And you get some sense of the artist, I think, from listening to this.
Good point. Yeah.
What you guys said, something that makes me think it's a piece of art. It's not really a rock album. Or if you're going to, it's more like you're going to experience something, then you're going to have a toe tapping, finger snapping experience. I'll admit, even though I know all that background about the source material, I still don't know what's going on half the time.
Yeah. it's pretty abstract.
I will say, I don't know how often I'll listen to it. In the future, I can see some beauty here, and I'm glad it was a fun exercise. Yeah. And thanks for going on it with me.
It's not the
I enjoyed going back and listening to it. Yeah,
it's an album that if you do want to explore it, I think you have to pay attention to it. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to sit and listen to a record like this. It's not the kind of thing I'm going to put on like on the back deck when I'm grilling burgers. I'm not going to put it on the basement when I'm shooting pool with the boy. Like, none of that, right? But, you know, if I'm maybe sitting around home alone and have a few of these drinks or whatever. And
your team just lost by 14 points.
That's the thing I was thinking.
Your sports team got their ass kicked.
That's right.
That's what I was actually thinking. It's a great depression record. Like, if something really bad happened in your life, this might be a good cathartic way to clear out some of that, those feelings,
completely,
right?
Listen
to this and enhance it with, you know, something you consume.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's very true, and I really enjoyed it. And I will also say, for those who are Lou fans, the Hudson River Wind Meditations is also a really interesting record he made at the end of his life. It kind of goes in the other direction from this, so it's cool. Apparently, he went out there on the Hudson and did his Tai Chi every morning. So,
and I listened to some of the Raven just to see if it was as loud as this. And there's actually a 2-record version of that. It's on Spotify or Tidal or probably both of them. And it actually has like William Dafoe on there and some other actors doing readings. It's quite different than like the Alan Parsons, you know,
version.
Tales of Mystery and Imagination or whatever it is. So if you're a Lou Reed fan, you haven't listened to those, I would recommend giving them a shot.
Yeah. All right.
Very cool.
We'll see if this warped our minds in the days to come.
That's right. We need something to pick us up for tomorrow. And I think we have just the thing.
Yes, we do.
All right. Okay, thanks, Mike. Thanks for bringing us our attention. If anyone would like to comment on the album Lulu by Lou Reed and Metallica, we would love to hear it. We will follow this up. I'd love to get other people's...
If it's anybody's favorite or top five Lou album, I would love to hear I would love to hear from those
folks.
Or
if you just think it didn't get a fair shake at the time, or it's underrated, or or if you think it's just a complete failure, that too. Whatever, you know, send it to us.
Yep.
Call, leave a message,
612-440-1984.
Yes, or email rock@suburbspod.com, or find us on the social medias, all of them at suburbspod. All right, let's get out of here. It's Rockin' the Suburbs. Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And I'm Mike Snyder.
And we'll talk to you all later. I will in a second, as soon as I get connected to your Wi-Fi.
Oh, you need a...
Which network is it?
Oh, it's... I don't know.